How aware are you?
You're probably aware that mammograms are a great way to detect breast cancer.
And that regular, moderate walking can be good for heart health.
But are you aware that the fifth most common cancer in the United States is uterine cancer?
And that the average age at diagnosis is 60?
Well, I definitely wasn't when I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer at the age of 32.
And that's exactly what inspired this podcast.
We are Mary and Alex, a mother-daughter duo engaged in multi-generational dialogue surrounding subjects related to gynecologic cancer, women's healthcare, and various other topics that impact our daily lives.
We are
Down There
Aware.
Welcome back to our first June episode.
June is busting out all over.
Something like that. You know, we always have a song for everything.
We do.
And we are nearly halfway through 2022.
Can't believe that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to think about that the year is has gone by so quickly. And, you know, we've been talking about what do we want to talk about? What is timely? And there's a lot of stuff going on, but it seems that mental health and mental health issues and healthcare have been in the news a lot lately. And so we wanted to take a minute to talk about how a cancer diagnosis, another kind of devastating diagnosis, other medical issues, can affect our mental health.
Yes, and I think we're tired for many reasons, and that sort of led us in the direction of mental health and what has affected us, how it's affected us, and what can we do about it?
And, you know, as of lately, with I'm still going through some issues and not related to my cancer diagnosis, but I have really seen how a physical impairment it's mentally exhausting. And then that kind of turns into a physical exhaustion. And
then it's kind of a circle.
Right. Because then, you know, you're physically resting and then you feel bad or negative about being lazy, quote unquote. And so then you try to do something and then it's exhausting to do it, or you have a hard conversation, or you think about your condition too long, or all of the ramifications of it.
Or you can't do what you want to because of whatever's going on with you.
Right. And not being able, I think one of the hardest things mentally about a physical ailment or a diagnosis or treatment that you're going through or something is not being able to do what you used to do.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, whether that's a temporary thing, you're not able to do things because you're going through chemo right now, or you're not able to enjoy the things you used to enjoy because of, I mean, and it doesn't even have to be like a negative condition. It could be pregnancy. You can't eat sushi anymore because, you know, so if your lifestyle is changing or you can't exercise as much or whatever it is, we're creatures of habit and creatures of routine. And I think when we can't, when that gets shaken up, I don't know. It impacts your mind greatly.
Well, and we learn with young children, all the research tells us that they need a routine, they need consistency, and they need the routine so they can predict what's about to happen, and that helps them feel safe. So I think it's ingrained in us from a very young age that routine is good, it's healthy, and it gives us a certain amount of security because we can predict what's about to happen. So I think from a young age, if we're needing a routine and then, like you said, it gets upset for whatever reason, it's difficult to handle.
Well, and, you know, when your routine is upset by a diagnosis or a condition or an injury or something happens, you can no longer have expectations and you don't know what is happening. For example, since April, I had an appointment scheduled for June 7th to see a neurosurgeon. And that was kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. I was going to finally have this conversation. That's when they were going to get me in. Well, 2 weeks before that appointment, I was contacted and said I needed an MRI. Well, that's really complex for someone like me because I have a defibrillator, and that causes all kinds of issues on where you can have an MRI done. And then they also have to have a representative, a medical representative from the company who produced my defibrillator to be there. So that limits
physically,
they have to be there, to run tests both before and after the MRI. Anyway, so it's very limited. I'm not a normal human being who can just get on the schedule for a regular MRI. And because of this, and add on top of that insurance, that it all has to be approved ahead of time, there was no way that I was going to be able to get this done in 2 weeks. And so I called the neurosurgeon's office and said, is there any way he can see me and have like a consultation, have, you know, a physical exam, and then look at the MRI later to confirm what's going on? And they're like, yeah, no, that's not how this works. So that appointment that I had so been looking forward to having is now going to happen at the beginning of August. And I was lucky to even get, you know, that soon, which is kind of ridiculous. But so again, you know, I had kind of put all my hope in that basket of, oh, I'm going to be able to see this doctor now. And then it all changed. Everything was different.
Well, and like you said, when things change, and especially if you don't know if it's for a limited amount of time or for a lengthy period of time, I think probably the worst part of that is when you just don't know how long it's going to be. So you don't really have that light at the end of the tunnel. Well, it's kind of like if you have something wrong with you that surgery can fix and you go in for surgery, and once you're healed from the actual surgery, you're fine. You have an end point, and so you have something to look forward to and the knowledge that you're going to turn a corner at some point. But not knowing when it's going to get better, I think is probably very taxing mentally because it kind of weighs on you.
Well, and I think about anything I do, and maybe I'm not normal. I mean, we know I'm not, but you know, I don't know if other people think like this too, but like if I'm exercising or if I'm cleaning or cooking or reading a book or whatever, you always have an end in mind. There's always, okay, well, this is going to be a 20-minute, you know, exercise video, or it's going to take me this long to clean the kitchen, or when I drove to Chicago last year, all right, it's 8 hours this day and 8 hours the next day. It's not the most fun thing, but I can count it down. I can count the miles down. And when I've had CTs or MRIs previously, it was a countdown thing. I need them to constantly tell me, okay, you have 45 minutes. Okay, it's going to be about 30 more minutes. Okay, it's going to be about 15 more minutes. Because the knowledge that it will end helps you push through it. And like you said, not knowing, it's like, well, how hard do I push? Because I don't want to exert myself all right now. And or do I just need to accept this as my new normal, which is also terrifying. So, you know, it's
it goes back to that predictability. Mm-hmm. I think you need the assurance of an end in sight. And when you don't have it, it's it weighs on you. It's a burden.
Yeah. And so the way that I have been coping with that is I have really kind of dug into things that I can control, routines that I can control. I've started making my bed every single day for whatever reason. That has been something that when I wake up, I make my bed. It's, you know, there's no question. There's no, oh, I'm not going to do it today, whatever. And same thing with, I used to be notorious for leaving dishes in the sink because, oh, there aren't that many and, you know, whatever. But that's another thing. I go to bed with a clean kitchen. And I think it's probably just a little bit of, that's all I can control right now. I can control my environment. And so I have to do that like overtly.
Well, I think maybe COVID has done to a lot of people who don't have ongoing medical issues what the medical issues have done to people who do. And because nobody really knew when we first heard about COVID way back in 2020. We thought, well, a couple weeks, a month, you know, and this thing's going to blow over. I mean, I know we talked about that because we had to cancel a trip to Germany that we'd planned for years. And we're so looking forward to, and we just figured, well, we'll do it later in the year. And of course,
and that's what Delta told us too. Yeah. They're like, okay, you need to rebook your trip by September. Yeah. And we were like, okay.
And nobody really knew that it would drag on for years. And I think we were all able to kind of feel that same burden of, when is this ever going to end? When is it going to get better? And you know, we went through the vaccines came out. They were hopeful. We understood masking and how that helped. And, you know, there were a few signs of hope along the way, but there was still this heavy mental anguish about, you know, when is it going to be over? When can I see an end?
And I think still in June 2022.
We wonder that.
We really wonder that. And especially, you know, with you having to deal with long COVID symptoms. Mm. And, you know, is it a symptom? Is it something that will go away? Is it something that you're going to have to live with forever? I mean, like, I sure hope not. Yeah. With everything that you're going through. But it's really hard when you don't know when the end is going to be to just be in it.
And for me in particular, and we've talked about this on a previous episode, that with long COVID, I now have parosmia and dysgeusia, a distorted taste and smell. And so there's a lot that I can't eat. And that may not sound like a big deal, but I'm going on 6 months now. I just keep saying to myself, there'll be a day when this is going to get better. I saw an ENT and he said, you know, it just takes time. We can do some smell therapy, which I've done. But basically there's nothing you can do. It's an olfactory nerve inflammation. It has to rewire itself and, you know, it just takes time. So if I find myself getting frustrated about it, which I do often, because I just want to bite into a hamburger. I just say, you know, this isn't forever. And honestly, if it is forever, it's not the absolute worst thing that ever happened to anybody. So, it weighs on you mentally.
Yeah. And even though it's not the worst thing that has ever happened to anybody, it still really sucks.
Yeah.
And it still is really impacting your life and your lifestyle.
Dramatically.
You know, and even, I mean, for better or worse, we were notorious for ordering, you know, we would record the podcast, order dinner,
watch a movie.
And just that little change has really adapted, you know, what we do in our own routines. Yeah. And you've kind of developed other routines. And you were telling somebody the other day in one of your support groups or Facebook groups that you've had to get out of the mentality of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. And do more of, when I'm hungry, eat something and have like go-to foods that, right, you know, aren't going to make you sick or smell, mm-hmm, bad or taste bad.
Yeah. I just had to adjust my mentality. That this person was asking, you know, they said, I eat this for breakfast, I eat this for lunch, but I really haven't found any safe, is what they call it, safe foods for dinner. Can you give me some recommendations? And I just said, you know, I'm out of that mentality, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There are so few foods I can eat that when I'm hungry, I eat something that I know is safe. And that's about the only way I've been able to cope with it.
And I think part of, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think another part of what makes it so difficult for people with dysgeusia and parosmia is our culture has demonized certain foods and moralized good or bad. This food is, carbs are bad, and fruit is high in sugar, mm-hmm, and it can be bad. Those happen to be the foods that are safe for you to eat and that you can eat. And so I think some people have had a difficult time getting over the fact that I have to eat what I can. And the world is telling me that carbs are bad and sugar is bad, but that's what I can eat. I have to eat something, mm-hmm. you know, it's very different when you no longer have the full array of options.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, looking back at, the mental wear and tear on somebody because of, health issues, medical issues, or different diagnoses, just getting a definitive diagnosis, knowing what it was, knowing it was caused by COVID, knowing there are other people more and more who are becoming involved in research and studies because now the connections are being made. That has helped a lot. I think not knowing anybody who has something going on within them and they know something's not right and they don't have a diagnosis, I think that probably causes the most mental anguish. If you get the diagnosis, even if it's a bad one, at least you know what it is and you know what plan you can make.
Well, and for people like us who love researching things mm-hmm. and feel comfort, I think, in a way, of learning more and knowing more and figuring it out. And I was talking to a friend yesterday about how my appointment got bumped and they were like, is there anything that you can do in the meantime? Can you do physical therapy? Like, I can't believe they haven't prescribed you physical therapy. Are there stretches you can do? And I'm uncomfortable doing anything because there's so much conflicting evidence. And it's not even like, you could do this or you could do that or, you know, whatever. It's this is really helpful and this is hurtful. And then on the next thing I look at, it'll be the exact opposite of that is helpful and this is hurtful. So I don't feel comfortable because I certainly don't want to do any more damage. And I don't think the potential, at least for me right now and where I'm at, I don't think the potential of maybe helping it a little bit is worth the potential risk with not really, you know, being directed in a way or, so most of the time research can give us comfort when we have that diagnosis and we know what we can kind of cling to.
Well, and that's the added frustration, that your appointment had to be bumped because I think sitting face to face with the neurosurgeon would have given you a lot of answers that now, you know, you've had to put off for two more months. And so you can't even find out anything you might be able to do or something you might be able to do that would help or keep it from getting worse or becoming permanent. I mean, you just need to talk to an expert and he can't really do his job until he has the tools, which is in part that MRI you need.
Right. And, you know, and this is a side note, but we found out recently that the contrast for MRI, CTs, things like that is in short supply because of supply chain issues. And so they are only doing emergent scans with contrast now. While I don't need contrast, that's something else that it's impacting everything, you know, everything's connected and tied together. And so that's an added layer onto maybe something would have taken a couple weeks. Now it's going to take months.
Well, and the interesting thing, one of the many interesting things about that to me is we didn't even know about that. And we would not have known about it, except I was ordered for a cardiac CT with contrast. And there were some issues until my doctor said it needed to be done. And otherwise, we wouldn't have known. But even when I was in there getting that done, the nurses talked about it, you know, to me about how it's really hard to get people in for the contrast procedures because it's in short supply. It is manufactured in China.
As so many things are.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think another aspect of the mental impact that, you know, we have when we have a diagnosis or something like that is, I know for me personally, I almost feel guilty when I think, oh, I'm having a bad mental day or whatever, because I personally know people who have struggled with really, really dark mental health issues that I haven't. And so it's, I think it's natural to compare yourself. It's not good, but I think it's natural to happen. And so I often, you know, say, well, you don't have it that bad. You don't have it that bad. But in the scheme of my life, I don't suffer with severe depression, suicidal ideology, things like that, or ideation, excuse me. But where I am, it's pretty low for me,
mm-hmm.
you know,
it's
so
not who you are.
Right. And, I saw recently someone talking about how the pain scale, the physical pain scale, is first off, it's useless because everybody's one is different from everybody's 10 is different from everybody's 5. And I personally, I don't know if it's an anxious thing or a OCD thing or whatever. I never rate anything as low as it can go or as high as it can go for whatever reason. I just think, well, it could always be worse or it could always be better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that pain scale, it is only good if you talk to the person about their personal experience with pain. And doctors don't do that typically. So when I go into a doctor and say, oh, I'm at a 7, I'm at an 8, this is really, really bad, that might be somebody's 3 because they've experienced immense pain before. And all of that to say, even if your mental anguish and your depression or your, you know, whatever mental health issues are happening in part because of your diagnosis or conditions or aging or whatever's happening, it can still suck for you and it can still be really bad, and you shouldn't feel badly that you feel like that just because other people feel worse, if that makes sense.
Well, and not only should we not feel badly, we should embrace it and address it. Because like you said, we're all different and we all need different treatment or need things addressed a different way that is specific to our needs. So it's important to, you know, you might on the surface go, oh, well, I know so-and-so who's going through this and that's much worse than I'll ever know. And that may very well be true, but it doesn't mean what you're going through doesn't need to be addressed. And it's important. We talk a lot about being your own advocate, and it's important to recognize what's going on with you and address it.
Yeah. And your experience based on your past and your history and what you've gone through is completely valid. You know, how you're feeling, how you're feeling mentally. If you're mentally exhausted, people might not understand that. And that's why, like mom said, you have to advocate for yourself, because your feelings are valid. And, just to remember that, because it can be difficult and you might want to compare yourself. It's really easy to do that. But you know, for someone like me who I've never really experienced depression or anything like this, you know, this whole being impaired and having a disability, physical disability, and being limited in what I can physically do, that's not something I'm used to. And that has really taken a toll.
Well, and I've seen it, in, you know, seeing how it's affected you. If we're out walking and you're not able to keep up, you get frustrated. You don't get frustrated with the people around you. You get frustrated with yourself because you can't keep up, or in your mind, you think you're not keeping up, but,
well, because I'm a notorious fast walker.
Yeah.
I mean, my entire life I've been told to slow down. And even as a big girl, I've been told, okay, slow down. Like, I got to keep up or whatever. And I've never had a problem keeping up with people. But this has, it's really taken a toll. A couple weeks ago, I went to a conference for work, and I've typically, when I go out, for a long period of time, or I know I'm going to be walking a lot, or I'm going to be in a place where I'm not familiar with it, I have been wearing a boot because, the danger of what's happening with my, issues now is that I could fall, that, you know, I would trip over my foot that's not strong anymore, and that I would fall. And so I wore my boot religiously at this conference, and so much so that it like tore up my leg. It's kind of old and the padding is thinned out and it moves. And so the plastic was rubbing up on my leg. But I was going to wear it. I was going to keep up. I was going to walk fast with everybody who's walking fast. I wasn't going to be the person that held everybody down, you know. And, you know, conference hotels are big and you're moving around and walking a lot. And normally I would have no problem with that. But now I'm suffering with the bruising and the scarring and the scabs that are coming with it. But it's hard to get past that point. And it's really hard to accept help. And it's really hard to say, like, I need a minute. I just need to sit down a minute, or I need to just, you know, stand here for a second. 'Cause I'm not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think part of that is I've fought my entire life to not give anyone a reason to call me lazy because I'm fat.
Mm.
Does that make sense? So I've always tried to fight that, like, lazy people or fat people are lazy mentality of I've tried to, you know, even though I'm a big girl, I can go. And so now that I can't, I'm like, oh, I am what they say I am, kind of thing.
Yeah. You don't want to be perceived as lazy because right. you're not moving like you normally would. But that goes back to a previous episode when we talked about not caring what other people think.
I know. Maybe I should re-listen to our podcast.
Yeah. I mean, the mental, I keep calling it anguish, and I think that might seem like hyperbole. It's different.
All I can think about is agony.
It's just different for everybody, but the toll that it takes on us mentally when we are going through a health challenge is not something to take lightly. It does happen, and it doesn't mean we've given up and we have surrendered to whatever it is that's going on. It just means we've accepted that's what's happening to us right now, and we have to deal with it.
And I think we can also get into that toxic positivity kind of culture of, you can get through this. You can do this. And sometimes I just want people to shut up. Sometimes I just want to say, you know what? This is really hard right now. I know it's going to change. I know we're going to work towards ending it. But right now, this is really hard. And I just need you to be okay with it. It's okay to have some negativity in your life. It's okay not to be Little Miss Sunshine all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while, yes, we have hope and we want to be, you know, positive overall, some things you just can't be positive about.
Yeah. And you don't want to wallow in negativity.
No.
But, you know, you got to have your moment to feel your feels and, you know, to understand your emotions and the reason for them and deal with it. If you don't recognize it and understand it, you're not going to deal with it. And that's not healthy.
Well, and like, you know, you might be feeling a certain way. Sometimes if you've never felt like that before, or you haven't felt like that very often, you really have to do some digging to find out, like, why do I feel like this? Like, why is this affecting me so much? Like, what is going on? And that can take time, and that can be a challenge, but, sometimes you just got to feel it, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. And that's, we have feelings for a reason. And, you know, so it's important to try to understand, and nobody really can understand it better than you if you take the time to sit with your emotions.
Yeah. And, you know, if journaling, meditating, praying, whatever your thing is, if that's not working for you, there's professional help for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people who go to many years of college to figure out how to talk to people and how to have them kind of rework what they're thinking and what they're feeling. One of the coolest images, and I'll try and find it and put it on the website, that I have found about what therapy is. It's a person sitting talking to a therapist, and their brain has all of these like knotted colored lines, kind of looks like balled up yarn. And then so it's like before, and it has all the knots and stuff. And then the after is the person figuring out with the therapist, and the lines kind of stretch out, and the to the therapist where you can like understand what they are and you can categorize them. And it's a really cool kind of visual of, you know, because therapists aren't going to fix you. They just help you understand why you're feeling the way you're feeling.
And I do think the medical community in general has changed a lot. And I think they're working toward treating the whole patient and not just what disease or condition they come in with. I think there's a lot of attention now on mental health and emotional health in regard to a diagnosis. And I know here in Tallahassee, the Cancer Center has this complete department that has all of the specialists in one building so that the patient can go from specialist to specialist according to what they need right there at their own convenience. And that involves some mental health as well. So, you know, it's good to see how medicine continues to change and evolve and get better as we learn more about what we need as patients.
And I also just want to kind of leave something too, that you don't have to have had gone through a horrific accident, have a major cancer diagnosis, have a debilitating illness to struggle mentally.
Oh, no.
Like, at all. And I don't want that to come across that, you know, that's just our perspective, because that's where, you know, we have, that's our experience.
And that's what the podcast is about.
Right. but also, you know, anything can affect us and everything affects us, you know, mentally. And so to take time for yourself and take care of yourself. And, you know, a lot of people think self-care is a hair mask and a face mask and painting your nails or whatever.
And a bubble bath.
And a bubble bath.
But candles.
Like, but it's much more than that. It could be taking a walk. It could be writing in your journal. It could be reading. It could, you know, just be sitting quietly and meditating. So figuring out what that self-care is for you is really important, and to make sure that you fit it into your routines.
Yeah. And I think we just wanted to just spend a few minutes talking about how different medical diagnoses or health conditions affect us mentally. And that's just a normal thing, and it's okay.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. As always, we bring episodes to you on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. And we are just so happy for everyone who is listening and sharing. We really appreciate everybody spreading the word, because we don't feel that we're special in any way, that but we do think that we have a pretty cool platform to discuss issues that are not often talked about in the world enough. And so you can find us on our website, www.downthereaware.com. You can listen to past episodes on the website as well. And we are, wherever you're listening to your podcast, you can rate and subscribe and leave a review and leave a comment. And all of that really helps the algorithm, all that stuff that Elon Musk is fighting about now. It really helps, you know, get us to the top of the charts and get people to notice us when they're looking for content to consume. So find us on our social media platforms, Down There Aware. We're kind of all over the place. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat. No, not Snapchat.
TikTok.
What's the other one? TikTok. All the things. Down There Aware. And if you have any topics that you want to hear us talk about, or if you have questions you want to ask, feel free to DM us on any of our social channels or email us at downthereaware@gmail.com. We really appreciate you listening to this episode, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening.